Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Somos Mas, the official podcast of Somos Mas NM, and your source for the latest news and notes on New Mexico United and the New Mexico Runners. My name, of course, is Seth Bidoff. Joining me this evening, we have the very incorrect Earl Nieto. Earl, how are you doing this evening? Glad to have you with us. How was your weekend? And I have one burning question. How good does it feel to be so wrong?
So I don't know where to start with this one. Number one, my weekend was great. It was very jam-packed with a whole bunch of everything, from funerals to United Soccer, or from funerals to Maya's birthday to United Soccer to bowling to God knows what else I crammed in a three-day week.
That is correct. Real quick, happy birthday, Maya, if you're watching. I know I got to see you on Saturday. Told you happy birthday then, so happy birthday again. And hopefully Earl got you 10 more presents and all the cake and ice cream that you wanted.
Yeah, I don't think I did that.
Okay.
But what I did do is I did buy her a United kit. So I guess that counts for about 10 presents right there. Because it costs about as much. And then your second part of the question, by the way, Maya said thank you. The second part of the question, I've never been happier to be wrong. So for those of you who are confused, last week I went against a corporate shill.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest on this show too, actually. Welcome in to Jacob Terrell and baby Maggie. Jacob, I'm assuming that's Jacob. Fresh cut, no beard. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Welcome in. How are you? How are you? I thought you were out of the academy already. Glad to have you with us.
Yeah. Glad to be here, obviously. I start Sunday.
You look like you got ran over by a semi being driven by a Venus flytrap at a goddamn petrol station.
I don't know what any of that means, but thank you. I appreciate that.
You look quite a bit younger.
See, I think I look older. As weird as that sounds. You see the lines more, the wrinkles more.
Well, after Saturday night, hopefully there aren't as many wrinkles, but
I look like Maggie is what actually happens.
Yeah, the two of you do look very much alike at the moment.
I derailed the whole thing, and that's what I wanted to do. So I'm happy now. I'm gonna hop off now. Thanks. Thanks for having me on for a minute, and we'll talk to you guys later.
All right, man. We'll talk to you later.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm here. I'm here to stay for the show.
What?
All right. Good deal.
I don't know if I can fucking do this, Seth. I'm not going to lie to you.
Just don't look at the camera.
Earl, you don't have to be the straight man tonight. So, you know.
Fuck yeah.
Jacob definitely looks younger. My brain is confused.
My world is confused.
So,
before you go on. Hold on, Seth. So, there's a running joke. So, last week, as you saw, I don't know if Jacob you watched or not, I was eating baby food.
I did not see that part.
Yeah. So there's this new running thing in my family where every time we see a baby or anything baby-ish, a certain six-year-old says, "Earl, hear me out." So as soon as baby face Jacob, I don't know who she's even talking about right now. If she's talking about baby Jacob or baby Maggie over there. Either way, I got a text saying Maya said, "Hear me out."
Nice.
Baby Maggie is looking like she's grown quite a bit since the last time we've seen her. What are you feeding her?
Baby Maggie looks older than baby Jacob.
Yeah, I think it's been like over a month since I've been on.
Pretty close.
So
it's been nice.
Yeah, I know. And so, she's doubled in age basically since the last time I was on.
We have the we have Team Earl in the chat. We've got Team Maggie in the chat. So Maggie's got her own fan club.
So you know.
I mean, Jacob, how have you been? Like, you took some time off. You're getting ready to go to the academy. I know you've been working on I know you've been having some conversations with a friend of the show, Tyler Ortega, as far as getting back in shape, doing some running. How are things going? How are you? How's the family? Like, how are you?
We're all good. Last week, I did my pre-assessments to get into the academy and passed those. And so I'll be going to Santa Fe on Sunday. Starting the academy there, and it'll be 5 days a week until November 21st. I'll be in there. And so I'm simultaneously looking forward to it and dreading it at the same time. Mm-hmm. But, like we've talked about, it's something I got to get through and got to get done in order to keep this job. So we're gonna shoulder on and put our head down, get through it, and then, come back in November and do the off season pods and hopefully celebrate a championship.
Yeah. Things are looking up. Glad things are going well for you and the family. Glad to see you're training the next generation of Somos Mas for when Earl goes to college here in a couple of weeks. Now that he's graduated high school. Baby Maggie will be able to step in and fill his shoes quite handily.
Are you getting fussy? All right. Tell everybody bye.
Bye, Maggie. All right. Well, we are certainly glad to see you. Glad to see you're doing well. I know you've been talking. You and I have been chatting with Harry off and on. I've been talking to Tyler. A couple of the folks have been reaching out to us on social media. We haven't heard from you recently. So, I mean, before we dive into Saturday night, what's been your take over the past couple of weeks? How are things looking from your perspective in terms of what United is doing on the pitch?
Well, yeah, I don't remember. I think the lights game. I don't know if I talked about the lights game or not. But as everybody I'm sure on here knows, a 5-game unbeaten streak with 4 wins. And then that draw against Vegas that should have probably been a win. The only loss of Eric Cole's tenure coming at the hands of Phoenix in his second match after he'd only been on for like a week, if that. And so I think as we progress into Eric Quill's tenure here, you just see his fingerprints all over not only the roster changes that we've made that I'm sure we'll be getting to here in a minute, but also the style of play on the pitch. And it's definitely a more attacking front-footed style there. And it seems like as we have gone on through the last few matches, we've seemed to start to kind of shed that whole, like, oh, let's just get a lead and hold on to for dear life. I mean, obviously Detroit was only a 1-0 game, but at the end of that game, it wasn't like I wasn't holding on to the edge of my seat, trying not to fall off. It was a fairly comfortable win. And then you get 2 weeks off and you get Eric able to really work with us or work with the guys and make changes that way. And then all of a sudden, we get a 3-0 shellacking to Sacramento. And I got to say, man, I think the team's looking fantastic. I think we're in 7th place right now. But we've got a match in hand on pretty much everybody. And I think if we win that match, we're only like 4 points behind Sacramento for first place. So It's definitely not, we're not out of first place, but we're also barely in the playoff line. So the West is just kind of nuts right now. But we seem to be finding our stride at the right moment and hopefully being able to carry that through this home stretch of games and see where we land.
Speaking of Sacramento, obviously the bigger they are, the harder they fall. New Mexico United defeated Sacramento Republic FC, the top team in the Western Conference currently, by a final of 3-0 Saturday night. And you talk about those matches in hand. You talk about the difference in points in the standings. The United does sit 7th, currently 7 points out of first place. So with at least a match in hand on everybody in the Western Conference, 2 over upcoming opponent Orange County SC this weekend.
Isn't there one that has the same amount?
Well, I mean, Phoenix and Vegas do both have 19, and San Diego has 19 as well. But at least one in hand against most of the Western Conference, I should say. So, just a tremendous effort on Saturday night. Earl, you and I talked last week about this match, about what United has to do. We gave our scoreline predictions, and you predicted New Mexico United to lose, which is atypical for you. I'm usually the one that's betting against the team here.
Hold on. Mm-hmm. Why did you think this, Earl? What was your reasoning?
Why did I think we're going to lose?
Yeah.
Because have you seen the way we play at home?
I saw the way we had played at home with not Eric Quill.
Yeah, I know. And bad habits always come back.
So,
and that's why I was predicting a 1-0 loss. I didn't predict an ass kicking. I did predict a 1-0 loss just because it's Sacramento. They've been playing really good. And then when I saw the match notes and I saw that Rodrigo Lopez was out and all kinds of other these people from Sacramento were out, I was kind of kicking myself because that's when I noticed that I think I predicted wrong. But then I did.
Yeah, it was a pretty unusual prediction for you, Earl. Again, typically I'm the one that predicts against the club, and you guys, I sometimes catch shit for it, you know. But sometimes. Sometimes. Looking at it, I mean, you talk about Sacramento playing well. I mean, they'd been okay in their past five matches. They hadn't been stellar. They hadn't been great. In fact, they'd only won one of their prior seven matches. So I was kind of curious last week as to why, where you came from that, looking into it. Like, I mean, Jacob, what was your take? Obviously you weren't on the show last week, seeing what Sacramento had done in the run up, what were your thoughts before the match? Did you think we even had a chance in this one?
Yeah. I don't think I would have predicted, I might not have even predicted a win. It might have just been a draw. It definitely wouldn't have been a 3-0 win. But we just seen the groundwork being laid by Quill. And I'm telling you, Brucey as a 9 has just been a freaking revelation, because he's not your typical 9. But I think that's what Quill likes, is just this very fluid attack with everything going on up there. And I think I knew a couple of the Sacramento players were going to be out even before the match notes got there, because they'd been out for a while, or at least I assumed they were going to be out. And if this was going to be a match that, Quill was going to put his money where his mouth was, as far as, keep that attacking style, make sure that the fans were entertained and got what they paid for, after having 2 weeks off, obviously there was the friendly with Sunderland there. But other than that, it was 2 weeks off. And I just felt like they could have put something in place to take out Sacramento. And it worked even better than I thought it would. So I'm not going to say I would have. Hindsight's kind of hard to be like, oh, yeah, of course I knew we were going to win. But I definitely didn't think we were going to lose or guaranteed to lose. I think we definitely had a chance, and I probably would have predicted a draw if I'm trying to put myself in that mindset of before the match. But yeah, we looked fantastic.
Yeah, they really did. And it's, you talk about Daniel Bruce. Again, we've talked about Brucey over the past several weeks as far as what he's doing under Eric Quill. He seems very free in that 9 role. We see him making runs. You see him, pivoting and drifting out wide when he needs to, playing the ball back in. You see guys like Amando Moreno making runs that we haven't seen from him in a while. You see Sergio Rivas cutting across the pitch, laterally across the pitch, drawing guys to him. We saw it with the second goal on Saturday as he's cutting across, the defense steps up, and you got Amando Moreno wide open out on the left side. And so offensively, there's a lot going right for United right now. We're sitting, I think we're now fifth in the league in goals scored, somewhere right in. I will double check that stat, but
you can keep talking. I'll check it.
Yeah. You know, we're now, you know, sitting near the top of the league in goals scored. We're still doing pretty well defensively, not fantastic, but we're doing okay defensively. You know, three clean sheets now in the last, you know, four matches for United, which is something we haven't seen.
We are tied for seventh.
Tied for seventh. Okay. I knew we were up there somewhere. But to put on that type of performance against a Sacramento Republic side that was leading the league and defensive goals allowed, and the fewest goals allowed. I mean, just absolutely tremendous. And yes, they were resting a few guys, but still, you've got your number one back in the back. You've got a pretty solid defense back there, and United just picked them apart.
There's still something
we haven't seen.
Yeah, they're still tied for the league lead in goals conceded, even after giving up three. Barely 15, 12 going into the match. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we heard it on the broadcast. Nobody had ever scored, or nobody this year had scored more than one against them in a match. So just a huge, huge statement there.
Yeah, it was a really good win. And it was like I told you, Seth, and you told me otherwise. From where I was sitting, I thought that even the first half, we were the better team. Mm-hmm. We outran them, outpaced them. We had more attacking moments than them, that's for sure. And really what happened was we took them to the petrol station.
Again.
It's the twice in a row that you've mentioned petrol. Why? Is that your word of the day?
That actually is the word of the day.
I was wondering, why have you been to England recently? Like, why are we staying petrol?
No, so a certain six-year-old came up with petrol station and has not got it out of her head since.
Okay. Well, Maya, there you go. Earl has now said your word of the day multiple times today. So I think you're winning this, Maya. Whatever it is, whatever you get by Earl. You know, saying your word of the day, make sure he pays out.
She gets nothing.
I think you need to change.
You shut your mouth.
Maybe Marlena can help out with this. You know, there's got to be something if Earl gets the word of the day here.
There should be a reward if you get the word of the day.
We did get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took you long enough. But no, like I was saying, though, we outplayed them the first half for sure. And my biggest fear was that we were going to, because I believe it was 1-0 at half.
Mm-hmm. 10-4.
Look at Jacob practicing his 10 codes. My biggest fear second half was that we were going to back off like we did a couple weeks ago, where we just held on to the ball and maintained possession of it until the end when it was too late to even try to win. We didn't do that. Instead, we kept attacking. We saw Nicky Hernandez get his first goal. We saw
Moreno
got his one in the first half. Oh, no, he got second half. Harry got his first half. So, yeah, so to see attacking in the second half late in the game, even into the 90th minute, we were still attacking and not backing off. I mean, I liked it.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a nice change of pace and something that we hadn't really seen under Zach Prince or Troy. Saying that continued intensity from the attacking edge. And to your point, Earl, you said that I kind of went against your first half observations, and to that, like, I felt, from an attacking standpoint, we were playing really well. We were outplaying their defense tremendously. We were making plays in the midfield. We were getting the ball forward and putting ourselves in attacking positions. I gave ourselves plenty of opportunities to put the ball in. Defensively, though, we were a little lackluster. Like, we gave them some very wide open opportunities. Like, there was one chance that was right around the 30th minute where the Sacramento attacker was well behind, which I thought he was 15, 20 yards offside, you know, but the play continued and we had no shot at getting him. Like, there was no chance. And then, you know, we miraculously make a recovery, get back to prevent him from scoring. But, you know, I feel like defensively we had some lapses there in the first half. But going forward, we were absolutely the better team than what Sacramento was trying to do. And you could see how compact Sacramento was at the back. And we were really forcing that, forcing it through the middle to try to try to break that. And I actually asked Coach Quill about it after the game. I said, you know, you've talked about playing through the middle, making effort to play through the middle, not being afraid to do that. And I asked him, so what does that do for you tactically? And he said, what it does is it does force defenses, someone like Sacramento, who's already compact, you know, it still pulls them in even more. And it forces and prevents them from moving laterally side to side, which they like to do. Sacramento likes to move side to side, and they're very, very good at it. And, you know, one of the things, you know, part of that answer too is, you know, Coach Quill said, instead of, you know, when you're just passing the ball around the outside, trying to create space that way, the defense is just sitting there going back and forth, you know, preventing you from doing anything. But when you're going through the middle, that pulls them in even more compact and leaves the wide areas open, or even leaves you opportunities, you know, from that narrow position right there in the middle. So there's he's got a whole tactical reason for why he's driving that home. And it's paying off right now in spades for United.
Yeah, with the defensive point there, going back a little bit, I agree that we gave up a couple chances there, specifically that one that you thought was offside. I don't know how it wasn't. I never saw a replay that suggested they were right or wrong on that call. But I think that play shows, one, we were playing a little higher of a line, and Sacramento was able to take advantage of that one time, basically, because if I could be wrong, but I believe the rest of their chances in that first half weren't necessarily because of the high line. They just were able to kind of pick us apart a couple times and get into some dangerous spots. But I give credit to the defense on that one. The only thing that I will knock them for is every single member of that back line went and then realized, oh shit, they're not going to call it. Let's get back. And somehow they were miraculously able to still get back. I think that was kind of a knock on Sacramento's attacking play there, but at the same time, they hustled back, they got in position, they were able to not allow a goal there, or not even allow a shot on target, I believe, in that situation, which really, really impressed me. I think Sam, we're going to talk about Sam, okay, Errol? I don't know how you felt about Sam lately. I have a hard time watching the show because I start listening to it, and then I have so many things that I want to say, but I can't say it because I'm not on the podcast. So then I get frustrated and I'm just like, whatever.
So I think I know where you go. I think I know where you're going with this.
Okay.
Sam is a much better center back than central defender.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you stole that from me on Facebook.
Because I actually said
I'm pretty sure you stole that from all of us.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I said that like 3 weeks ago.
Okay. And because of that, because he has been much better at center back, one, the obvious thing is it takes him out of the midfield where we saw him make mistakes for the last full season, basically half of the first half of this one and the second half of last year, which benefits the team. But then two, I like that it gives Seymour the ability to, you know, play an outside back role at times and actually get up and create a little bit. It lets Harry do his thing, Suggs do his thing. and we needed help at center back. Like, we were struggling there with Seymour out with injury for a while, Cologne out with injury for a while. Ryden missed a game, or Ryden got hurt anyways in that Detroit match. And kind of gave me a little bit of a scare, but he eventually came back and looked good. But because of that, because we add Sam into that mix of center backs, and he's performed very admirably there, that really has opened up a lot of different things for the team. I think that move mixed with Brucey going to the nine are two of the biggest differences between our lineups with Quill in there versus when Zach was there. And I think that's not a coincidence that we've played better since those changes have been made.
Yeah, Sam has been, I mean, I've obviously been on the Sam bandwagon since last year, and you guys were not for a lot of last year. And
there was no way you were still on it at the end of last year.
No, I was fine with Sam last year. Like I was fine with him. But to his credit, like he's playing phenomenally well this year. He's had a few moments here and there where it's been like, okay, Sam, what are you thinking there? You know, obviously some of the fouls that he's given up and things like that, but you know, you look at his efforts defensively, you look at what he did, you know, some of the recoveries that he made Saturday night, you look at some of the interceptions and the clearances he made. I mean, Sam has been phenomenal, you know, and, you know, what we talk about a lot, you know, a lot of times these defensive efforts aren't necessarily going to show up on the stat sheet. Yes, you see clearances, interceptions, all that kind of stuff, but a lot of times it's just the effort involved in making those recoveries, getting back into position, forcing, you know, an attack to basically die out, you know, and Sam has been absolutely tremendous in that. And, you know, I've seen a few comments, you know, that Sam absolutely earned the armband on Saturday. And I can't find fault with that. I couldn't find fault with Sam having earned the armband before that, but yeah, that's a credit too. And, you know, I talked to Sam Saturday night. He was in the post-match presser. And, you know, I asked him, I was like, what are you guys doing differently? You know, and realistically, a lot of it is, you know, they're playing more compact. They're staying central. They're responding better. They're not letting themselves get caught out of position. Like you see them actively like reading the situation and making the right calls more often than not. And that's something that we weren't seeing. And it could be system from what Zach Prince had to what Eric Quill is doing and how he has them playing on the pitch, but they've got coverage. They've got guys who are able to get back. They've got guys who are able to cover each other right now. And it's paying off in spades. You look at the chances that Tambakis has faced over the past several weeks and dollars to donuts, there are fewer quality chances that Alex has had to save. I think that'd be an interesting stat to go back and look at. Like, obviously, if it's on frame, it's going to count as a save, but I think we've allowed fewer quality chances. And obviously, it's probably like an XG thing we have to go back and look at. But, you know, it's just the defensive effort has been phenomenal. I don't think Sacramento, for the most part, I don't think they had a truly like clean look on Saturday night.
No, if I can remember right, the like save of the week is a great thing to win, but if you're consistently nominated for it, like Tambakis probably should have been, you know, a month or so ago, there was probably like four matches in a row where he had a save that was at least nomination worthy. But for sure Saturday, there was none. Everything was easy or not on frame. It was either right to him or not on frame. And those aren't accidents. There was a play in the first half where Cicerone had the ball out on the left and Sam went down a little too early and he was able to get around Sam. No, actually, I don't think it was Sam. I think it was Harry that time.
Mm-hmm.
There was another time where Sam went down early, but this one was Harry. And Sam did a great job of funneling him towards the touchline, and Tambakis was able to come and wall it off. And I don't think that counted as a save because it was a cross frame, but it was a great picture of the defense knowing where their keeper was and how to funnel the shot slash cross slash pass, whatever you want to call it, to him. And you saw that several times in Sacramento. And I think it's great that we're bringing up the defense because it was something that I meant to bring up earlier when you asked me my thoughts on how we've been playing so far. There, you know, that's three clean sheets out of the last four matches compared to one, which was the first match of the season. So I think we had gone like 12 straight without a clean sheet or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, close. So you look at that and it's again, Sam going back to center back, you know, getting that midfield of, you know, Portillo, Rivas, and Nicky a lot of the time, you know, Portillo, we've obviously known has been a good central defender, in the midfield there. But Nikki and Rivas and Moreno and that front line of, you know, Moreno, Hurst, Bruce, so on and so forth, they've done a really good job of defending up front and cutting off passing lanes up there and winning the ball back in dangerous spots. And I think that's one of the reasons why Quill likes to see Brucey up there, is that he's not a, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 defensively, whereas a lot of your nines are going to be like, you know, fours, fives. He's like an 8, and his motor just lets him go and go and go and track back and defend and then turn around and attack. And that's been a huge credit to the defense there too. And so those three clean sheets, you know, two in a row now against, you know, a solid offensive team and then an offensive team with Detroit. But nonetheless, they've been two shutouts. They've both been at home. And those are key to going far in the playoffs and making this run that we're in. And so you talk about the defense and I mean, even Alex carried our ass for a lot of the season with some massive saves to keep us in games and keep us earning a point or three in a couple scenarios. And now that the defense is able to, I won't say carry him because he's not playing bad. He's doing exactly what he has to do. But the defense has been able to help him out to not put all that pressure on Tambakis, is going to go a long way in making everybody, keeping everybody happy and healthy for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And speaking of that, while we have him, we'll talk about, you know, a guy that hasn't really featured a whole lot this season. That's Josh Suggs. You know, Josh Suggs, obviously he broke 20,000 career minutes on Saturday night, becoming now one of five players to break that mark in their career. Four players did that on Saturday night. Four different players crossed 20,000 minutes on Saturday.
Really?
Yeah. Aiden Quinn, Josh Suggs, Hugh Roberts, and Kenardo Forbes all crossed 20,000 career minutes on Saturday. Now, obviously, the club had planned on, you know, Josh. They planned on celebrations for Josh, you know, earlier in the year had he done it, you know, at one of the prior matches. But some injury kept him out, and just, you know, squad selection kept him out as well from hitting that mark earlier in the year. He actually had a shot to become the all-time leader on Saturday. However, Aiden Quinn also played the full 90 on Saturday night. Aiden Quinn is currently the all-time leader in minutes played. He is now sitting on 20,096, and Josh is 14 minutes behind at 20,082. So second all-time to Aiden Quinn. I mean, Josh has been playing in the league since 2011, and you know, a guy that we haven't seen much of this year, at least not as much as we're used to, and he played the full 90 on Saturday, and honestly, he looked really good. Even late in the match, and
I think you can drop the really.
I mean,
so before you go into the really good part, I did have PTSD twice on Saturday. I had my own seats, but I had PTSD twice with Josh Suggs.
Oh yeah,
yeah. He was storming to the north side, with the ball, and I almost shit my pants. And then he was storming to the south side in the second half. And I'm pretty sure it was Ken that almost got ran over. And I said, hey, that would have been me had I been there.
Yeah, the ad boards here at the North End took a beating on Saturday. But yeah, I mean, Josh, again, we haven't seen much of him. And you know, he had the slight injury, came in. I thought he looked really good for the most part on Saturday. Made some good reads, made some good passes. Did some good things defensively. You know, do you expect Josh to get a full 90 going forward? Is this, you know, a one-time thing? Do you think Quill kind of spells him a bit? Like, what's the plan for Josh going forward?
I think we see a lot more of him. I think full 90s are very far and few between, or few and far between, but we can definitely expect to see 90s out of Josh Suggs for sure. He proved that he still has gas left in the tank this past weekend. Even crossing 90,000 or 20,000. 90,000. Even crossing 20,000, he still is proving that he still can go and he could still run for 96 whole minutes, whatever the hell they call it. But I do expect to see him more 70th minute being subbed off. unless the game is definitely like down to the wire 1-1 and we're looking for a goal, then he probably comes off for a striker or something.
Yeah, I think with Suggs, it comes down to health, because he wasn't healthy the whole year last year and missed time last year. And then I think pretty much all of this year has been health related. Maybe a few coaches' decisions there with Zach. But he's, you know, he played good. You mentioned passing. That was the one bugaboo that I had with him, where he had several, he was still great in attack and making the right runs and getting into dangerous spots. He just didn't do what I think he should have done with the ball at times. But that's could be not knowing where, because he's been injured and because he's been out, that could be not having the same amount of time with everybody in this new system as others have had. And so not knowing exactly where the ball should have gone in certain moments or whatever, I don't really know. But I think as long as he's healthy, I think full 90s are in the forecast, probably not every match, but he definitely showed that he still has gas in the tank and can still perform at a pretty high level. And I think as he comes back and as he gets more familiar with everything, all the changes that have been made and everything like that, I think you see a really, really dangerous Josh Suggs and just yet another person in the attack, especially that can do damage one-on-one out there in the wide parts of the field. And so I'm excited for him to get back healthy and start clicking fully with the team.
Yeah, absolutely. Exciting to see Josh get the record on, or get his moment on Saturday night at the club. Obviously both teams agreed to a stoppage in the 8th minute to give Josh a chance to be acknowledged by the PA and by the fans. And so nice little moment for Josh there. I was actually talking to David Wiese-Carl prior to the match, and Jules up in the press box, and I let us know that this was going to happen. They were, you know, both teams had agreed to play the ball out if it was still in play to give him an opportunity for that. So great moment for Josh. Really excited for him.
I guess it goes on with closing thoughts on Saturday.
Closing thoughts on Saturday. Yeah.
There's only one guy in this entire world that can pull off wearing a pink tutu, and it's David.
Unless I'm mistaken, I believe David was wearing a yellow tutu on Saturday.
Yellow, pink, tomato, tomato. I could be colorblind. I've also slept since then.
Okay. Meow Wolf Night, obviously. United finally gets their first win on Meow Wolf Night in club history. Bit of a bugaboo for whatever reason. The club just has never walked away, but to make it that sort of a statement against that club on Saturday, big, big deal for New Mexico United. Looking forward to this week, Orange County SC on the road. Orange County is coming off a wild game on Saturday. 6 first half goals between Orange County SC and Memphis 901, 5 goals plus an own goal. And then Orange County picked up a 4th in the second half, just an absolutely bonkers match on this one. Puts Orange County back above the playoff line as well, sitting even with New Mexico United on 28 points. They've won 4 of their last 5. They're scoring goals in bunches during this grouping as well. Their only loss in that time period is a 2-0 loss to RGV. Looking at Orange County, you know, bit of an oddity of a team this year. You know, they're not quite performing up to the standards where most of us thought they would be. They're actually, you know, a revenge match of sorts. We beat them 3-1 a couple months ago out at the lab. I mean, what do we make of this Orange County club at this point in time? Are they back on the right track, or are they still one of those Jekyll and Hyde clubs that you never really know what you're going to get? Earl, let's start with you.
I'm going to say it's a – you never know what you're going to get. I mean, in reality, it's soccer. You don't know what you're going to get. One day you have the ninth seed in the West beating the one seed in the West. Then you have a 17 goal game. And then on the other side of entire soccer, you have Lionel Messi playing for the last placed Inter Miami and winning games for them. So you just never know. Like, I think that's why I'm a sports fan, is because you just never know what can happen. Any given day, anything can happen.
Yeah, Messi the GOAT picking up a brace tonight en route to a 4-0 win for Inter Miami over Atlanta United. I mean, Messi's going to Messi. That's all there is to that, you know.
Like, spoiler alert, thank you.
Oh, you hadn't watched it?
No, I was going to watch it after the show.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I don't
care. Yeah, and obviously he had the tremendous free kick goal on Saturday evening, I believe, in the League's Cup. Unbelievable. Shitty-ass positioning by that goalkeeper, by the way.
Did I black out for it? How did we get on Messi?
Earl brought him up.
Oh, okay.
Because like I said, any given day, anything random can happen in soccer. Like Messi playing MLS.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah, I still don't know enough about MLS rules to really understand how exactly Inter signing all these former Barca players. I have no idea. But
it's insane. Could go into it, but I'm not going to.
I know there's been breakdowns on Twitter and Reddit and all sorts of places, but like I don't necessarily have the brain capacity to understand exactly what they've done. But apparently they've been preparing for this type of moment for, you know, like a year and a half. So
short version, you can have three DPs, which basically have no limit, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have the rest of your roster consists of GAM and TAM, salary cap measures. From my understanding, they have opened up the DP spots, designated player spots for Messi and Busquets, I believe. And then everybody else, they're just convincing to come here for under the DP salary, however they can fit it in there. As far as Messi's concerned, I think they basically like sold him half of Miami and then gave him
right, like Apple rights and a club franchise, yeah, rights, all sorts of nonsense.
Yeah, it was definitely the bottom half of Miami, like the nicer half. And rumor has it there's also parts of Key West.
But I really don't care how they did it. This is fantastic. I'm loving every second of it. It's great.
Yeah, it's just insane. But yeah, I mean, Orange County, I don't know what to make of them right now. I really don't. They've been looking really good. Now, obviously, Saturday's match was a bit of an oddity. You know, it's not often that you see six first half goals in a match, let alone six in any given match. But yeah, it's they went back. They changed one of the goals. Okay, one of them was credited as no goal on Saturday. They did change it. So, yeah, six first half goals. Like, I don't even know. I don't know. Other than the fact that they're playing really well right now. You know, obviously Milan Alaski, you know, is playing really well. 9 goals and 21 appearances for them so far this year. I don't see them as a well-rounded club. They don't necessarily do anything great, but right now they're playing well.
I think we throttle them. Their wins have been like the Memphis win. You already mentioned it. Throw that out the window. Just nonsense, right? They beat Loudon. Okay. Everybody's beating Loudon right now. Sorry, Adam. They lost to RGV and didn't score. They beat Monterey Bay, who's kind of in a free fall right now. They beat Detroit City, who has gotten hot a little bit the last couple matches, but we just beat them. And Detroit, I picked to finish last in the East, so I'm obviously not very high on them. The FC Tulsa win back in the middle of June is impressive, but it was back in the middle of June. And so that was a long time ago, but they've had some weird results. They got their ass kicked by Colorado Springs. They beat RGV in Orange County. They got their ass kicked by Oakland back in May. We actually beat them pretty handily back in April, which I had almost forgot about until I was looking up their schedule earlier. And so I'm just not sold on them being a contender necessarily. I don't think they're as good as some of the other players or some of the other teams that we've faced lately, mainly Sacramento, Colorado Springs, El Paso even. And so the only thing is we haven't fared very well in Orange County in our career, in our existence. So that has me slightly worried, but no, I think I'm going to go the Mr. Hyde portion of them showing up on Saturday.
Yeah, their home record isn't necessarily anything to write home about. They're 4-4-2. And yeah, I mean, really, you look back at their home record recently. They did beat Monterey at home. They beat RGV at home back in June. But yeah, they've been on the road a lot here in the past month and a half, almost 2 months, really. And so I think they do get a bit of a boost from being at home there. Now again, I don't think they necessarily draw very well, so there might be a little bit less energy in the stadium, and I just don't trust what they're doing. I don't trust them defensively more than anything. I don't think that they're going to be able to stop an attack, particularly a diverse one like what New Mexico United does now here under head coach Eric Quill. And it's really hard to put a pin on what changed from last year to this year for Orange County. And again, I'm not sold on them. Nobody stands out other than Iloski to me in terms of attacking threats, because I watched a couple of their matches. I saw what we did against them a couple months ago. I'm just not convinced by anything that they do.
Agreed.
So yeah, I was looking back now on the head to head. So since 2019, they've only beat us one time. And that was a 2-0 win here at the lab. There's been a couple draws, and then it's been United the rest of the way. So with that, I'm going to cut to the chase and cut the bullshit, and I'm saying a 3-0 win for United.
3-0 United on the road. Okay. Interesting prediction from Earl there. Yeah, the last time we played them out, it was 3-1. Greg Hurst had a brace back in April. Sergio Rivas picked up the third, and technically we scored all four goals in that match thanks to a Josh Suggs own goal in the second half. But yeah, interesting take, Earl. Any particular reason that you are going with that this weekend after predicting United to lose against the top team in the West?
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at the past week that United has had. They played Sunderland, turn around a couple days later, and they played Sacramento, and handed Sacramento a 3-0 loss on short notice, short rest, whatever you want to call it. So with them having a whole week to take on the 8th-ranked team in the West, I mean, under Eric Quill, God knows what can happen. We have shown that we like to play physical, and we like to continue to play throughout the entire match, all the way until the end. So I think us playing Sunderland to what was almost a draw, and then handing Sacramento their loss, I think that's a huge confidence boost. So in order to do that, I mean, you can turn around and you can definitely play the 8th-ranked team and have some kind of confidence, knowing what you just faced the week prior.
Quickly, to your point about us playing Saturday night on short rest, I mean, realistically, Sunderland was basically a shortened cardio session for the guys, because no one played more than 45 minutes. So I wouldn't necessarily say that we played, you know, on short rest. But I get it, you know, having two appearances within a week where you're playing high level competition, you know, because obviously, you know, Sunderland is a, was an extremely talented side, you know, going out and facing them. And they actually played the same 11 guys for the full 90 minutes as a fitness test. So, you know, towards the end, you could see the tiredness in their legs and whatnot. And you could see where the youth of New Mexico United really took advantage of that. But yeah, it's, I think it's going to be completely different against Orange County. Like you said, you know, United with a full week's worth of preparation here for them. Jacob, looking at Orange County on the road, given the stats that Earl gave us, given the way United's playing recently, what happened Saturday night at Championship Stadium?
We beat them pretty handily. I wasn't going to go 3-0, but I was going to go 2-0. I think the clean sheet streak continues. I think the offense continues to look good and attacking. I think we might give up a couple good chances early, like we did against Sacramento, but I think we settle in and I think if you kind of touched on it earlier, if you take out Olasky, then they just don't have a lot of options up there. And I think Sam and Kalen, and then whoever we start out as fullbacks, whether it's Austin or Suggs or Harry or Seymour or whatever, they all can handle him pretty good. Especially if you put Portillo near him as well. I think we've got the horses to take him out of his flow and rhythm. And I just don't see their offense being consistent enough to get past us. They did score 4 goals against Memphis, but Memphis is another one of those kind of like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde teams where, you know, 1 week they can look fantastic, but then I think, what was it? 10 goals that they gave up against San Antonio and Phoenix, if I remembering correctly. And so just it's not a good barometer of how well or how to look at Orange County. That Memphis game just wasn't a good barometer to judge them off of. And especially the East, I mean, the East did make up some ground. In fact, Orange County was the only Western team to win its East-West matchup this weekend. So they did gain some ground in the East-West standings, but it's still pretty lopsided. And especially if you look at goal differential in those matches, it is really lopsided. And so just can't take anything from that match. And because of that, I think we can hold them to nothing and get 1 or 2 past them. And I'm going to say 2.
Well, I have something we'll touch on here in just a minute. But yeah, no, it's Saturday night, Championship Stadium, another great opportunity for Eric Quill and his men to go out and put on another convincing performance. I think defensively we are far better than some of the teams that Orange County has faced recently. Again, Milan Olasky, to me, the only true scoring threat that Orange County has. I don't see them doing anything, you know, terribly, you know, unique offensively. I think that's where we stand up and really make that difference. Because I think offensively, I think it's pretty clear at this point that we are far more, we're far more creative than we were earlier in the year, even with that 3-1 win there. So I'm gonna go 2-0 as well. I don't quite see 3. I mean, it could happen, but you know, the chances are coming, the chances are falling, and United is making a statement here at the start of the back half of the season. So, yeah, that's our predictions for Saturday night against Orange County. You know, looking around the league real quick, obviously number of results went United's way on Saturday. A draw for Colorado Springs. A draw for Colorado Springs. San Diego was off. Oakland picked up a win over El Paso, which, Oakland jumped us in the standings, but it keeps things pretty close. And with Sacramento, San Antonio, El Paso all losing, 7 points. separate first through eighth right now in the Western Conference. So, you know, someone talked a few weeks back about over on, I think it was over on Twitter, it might have been John Morrissey talking about separation starting to happen in the Western Conference. That is not happening. No one is running away with the Western Conference right now. No one is out of the picture except, you know, I mean, you can make the argument that Las Vegas is already mathematically eliminated or at least pretty darn close to it. But yeah, the Western Conference is wide open right now. Eastern Conference has a little bit more wiggle room there. Jacob, you talked about the East-West matchups, the records there. This past weekend, Hartford beat Las Vegas 2-0. Miami beat a shorthanded Miami FC, beat San Antonio 1-0. Detroit City beat Monterey Bay. FC Tulsa on Friday night beat RGV. So yeah, a number of Eastern Conference teams picked up wins over the Western Conference this weekend. Now, to be fair, some of those clubs have been struggling of late. You know, obviously RGV, Las Vegas, and Monterey Bay, none of which are playing, you know, up to snuff at the moment. So East-West is going to get interesting. Western Conference playoffs, I mean, we may not see any separation at all like we do, like we have, especially, you know, from the top two to, you know, three through five, you know. We may not see that for several weeks. We may not see it at all the way things are playing out, you know. So it's going to be really interesting. You know, obviously, Mexico United, 19 matches played, 15 more to go in the regular season. Before we get out of here, we do have some news and notes from the club. First up, obviously mentioned earlier, Josh Suggs, congratulations on 20,000 career minutes to him. Great moment for him. Nicky Hernandez, a guy that we've talked about, a guy that has been impressive since his signing with New Mexico United 25 days ago. Club announced an extension, or I'm assuming it's a full contract through the end of the season. I don't know if it's necessarily I don't know if it's officially an extension, but Nicky Hernandez signed through the end of 2023.
Through at least the end of the 2023 season.
Because, you know, nobody can say...
Which says to me that there's an option there, whether it's team or player, I don't know. But
yeah,
I think there's definitely an option for a second year there. And I wouldn't be surprised if he keeps it up, how he's been playing and how he's affected the matches so far, if we end up seeing him come back next year as well. Because, I mean, he gets the game-winning assist in El Paso. He scores this fantastic volleyed effort in this match. And then he's just brought life to that midfield, both in the attack and on defense. And yeah, I think that's a huge, I mean, I would have been shocked if he didn't come back after that 25 day contract, after the 25 days that he had. So not super surprised, but definitely happy that he's back.
Yeah. I think it's a big addition to the club. You know, to keep him, I should say, a big deal to keep him. Came in at a time when we needed somebody creative in the midfield, and he's more than filled that role. And with the belief that Bees is still some weeks away from making his return, I believe from what I've been told, somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 to 5 more weeks potentially before Bees gets back to playing for the black and yellow as he recovers from the fractured kneecap. I mean, Nicky's been tremendous. You know, he was in the press conference Saturday night, and he said he's having fun. He's rediscovered a love for the game. He's really enjoying it. And we heard good things about him from, you know, from Harry and Robert over at San Antonio, about how good of a person he is, how good of a player he is, and to see him performing and enjoying it. And, you know, someone asked him about the dance he gave, you know, after his goal on Saturday. And he's like, he said something to the effect of, you know, he went viral for it after another tournament. At some point last year, earlier this year, before signing with the club. And, you know, his history with Eric Quill, I think he's been tremendous so far, and I can't wait to see what happens with him the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned him kind of filling in a role for Weehan. It's to the point now where, you know, when Weehan comes back, we're going to have tough decisions every match on what kind of midfield that we're going to put out there, especially with Hurst playing more of a 10 with us as well. I mean, you can obviously move him up and sub out Brucey every once in a while, or give Brucey a blow and start Hurst up there every once in a while. But it's definitely, you know, I was Doling was after, or was Dolling, we haven't talked about Dolling, haven't we?
No,
have you guys talked about him? Okay. So obviously, he was MIA basically since Quill came in, and I think we all kind of speculated he was going to be moved, and then lo and behold, this week I think it was, or last week,
Thursday or Friday,
late last week it gets announced finally that he's moving on. He's loaned out to Vegas for the rest of this year. My guess is he was probably on a 2-year, so I don't know if that's a Brian Brown thing where we loan him out this year and then we trade him in the offseason, or if he comes back and actually is a part of this team this year. I think I'd like to be able to know what exactly went down that led to that, but obviously we'll never know because transparency is not a thing in the USL. But you know, if you're loaning out a player of Dolling's capacity, you have a pretty good attacking squad. And we've made a couple other moves. You guys talk about Jacobo
we did talk about the signings last week.
I can't remember the timing on this stuff. It was before.
Yeah. Dolling was announced after Sunderland.
You told us.
Yeah. I found out information about that on Wednesday of last week. So that was announced later last week. Jacobo and Isaac were announced, you know, the week prior. In the press conference,
Eric, I'm sorry, what did you say?
Jacobo.
Is that how they pronounced it?
Yeah, Jacobo. That's how Eric pronounced it in the presser the other day.
Okay. Because I've been called.
I said Jacobo, and you know, he said Jacobo. So
yeah, huh. Never heard it pronounced that way.
Yeah. Because he's coached him before.
Okay.
So we did find that out after Sunderland because I asked about that. He said he coached him before. With those two guys coming in, Dolling going out, and then, you know, I mean, it kind of made me question what happens with Hirsty, what happens with Brucey. And the reason neither of them played on Saturday night is because one of them received Federation clearance on Friday. The other was expected to receive it early this week. So that's why neither of them played on Saturday. The player that received it on Friday, he was cleared by the Federation, but was not in time to be in the team sheet. So, or to be in the match day roster, I should say. So we may see them in matches going forward. And again, it brings up the question, what happens with Hersey? What happens with Bruce? What happens with, you know, even Amando, you know, because you saw what both of them could do in brief.
Okay. All right.
And
I know Mondo and Bruce, you don't have to worry about.
I don't think so.
On this team. I think
I know Hurst people will question that
too, but Mondo and her and Brucey are not going anywhere.
Yeah. No, I don't think they're going anywhere. I just, you know, with the,
I don't think their playing time is going anywhere either.
Yeah. With the now, you know, abundance of forwards that we have now, again, you know, it's how do you balance that time? Who gets the most? And again, you could see what both those guys bring to the table, even in, you know, brief minutes. So, and we did get information. So I don't know if you saw the broadcast, the Sunderland broadcast, the two were fighting over the PK over who's going to take it.
Yes, I did see that.
Isaac's family was here. So the story is that Isaac's family was in the stands sitting next, I believe was sitting over by, sitting with Pete. And so he was wanting to take the kick in front of them, even though Jacobo had drawn the foul. So that's why they were fighting over it. Isaac wanted to take it in front of his family. And so, you know, if you saw him, he was blowing kisses, like that's what was going on. His family was in the stands. So
it was a very interesting moment. I will say, and then right afterwards, Jacobo goes and celebrates. And so that made it seem like there was no animosity there, but there was definitely a tussle over who was going to take that.
Yeah, it definitely was. A lot of big things going on for New Mexico United. Players coming in, players going out, guys contributing in ways that we didn't see earlier in the year. And United is definitely on the upswing right now. Looking forward at the back end of the schedule, I know that John Morrissey at USL Tactics put out a ranking of the hardest back end of the schedule, and ours was like number 2 in his rankings. So And it'll be interesting to see, you know.
It's tough, but it's very East heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And so I don't know what his model was, but if his model is looking at, oh, well, Pittsburgh and Charleston and all these teams are at the top of the East and we still have to play them. I think this year so far has proven that the top of the East isn't
not as good as it has been.
It's the top of the East, but it's still the top of the East. And so, I mean, when Charleston can get shellacked 7-0 by San Antonio, and then Memphis is over here getting walloped by a couple teams and stuff like that's happening. Obviously, like Earl said earlier, anything can happen on any given day. But overall, I think the East is definitely weaker. So depending on how his model was related, if it was just like a strictly points-based, win-loss, draw-based model, then that's going to be skewed a little bit because the East is – the top of the East that we still have to play has more wins and more points, but it's coming against lesser competition, in my opinion. So we'll see how that actually plays out. I actually really like our second half of the schedule other than some of the travel going back east and coming back and forth. But I think it sets up nicely for us.
Yeah, you look at a couple interesting stretches, you know, Saturday, you know, in August, you have Saturday, Wednesday, you know, and then another Saturday, you know, a Saturday immediately after. So, like, you've got five matches in 12 days. So yeah, it's gonna be a really tough stretch there. But you know, after these next two matches on the road, you know, Orange County and Hartford, which I will be at the Hartford match. So if you're in Hartford, I did reach out to one of the guys from the Hartford podcast, and they have not put out an episode since like April. So I tweeted one of the guys who did participate in, or didn't tweet out. I DM'd him. X'd him. I don't even know. Like,
yes, they DM.
I DM'd him. He was one of the guys that participated in the EUSL championship a couple years ago. So I played against him and talked to him a few times. I shot him a DM to see, you know, what to do. Is there any particular place to eat in Hartford that he recommended? Things of that nature. Maybe some way to meet up with some of the Hartford locals. But after that match, New Mexico United finishes with 8 of 13 matches at home. So you talk about John Morrissey's model,
including 4 in that 5-game stretch that you had mentioned a minute ago.
Yeah. So fortunately there's no travel there, but yeah, it's, you know, 4 matches within, you know, 10 days or so at home. So should be a good opportunity. You look at that stretch, Oakland, Tulsa, Vegas, and Charleston should be a pretty good opportunity. I mean, right now under Eric Quill, since he came in, United's 4 wins, 2 draws, 1 loss, and at home, 3 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss. So, you know, on a points per match basis at home, he's doing a pretty damn good job so far.
Agreed. On a side note, how does it feel to have started the El Paso spiral?
that's definitely, it feels good. You know, it does feel good. And they're 5 winless now.
Yeah. Yeah. So loss, draw, loss. I love it.
Oh, it's fantastic. You know, you throw that one little, you know, wrench in the works, and like El Paso becomes a dumpster fire again. So now, obviously they're still sitting third place. You know, we know that they've performed well up until now, but you know, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
You remember that they started with three straight losses.
They did.
It feels like a forever ago because they had a 12-match win streak there, or unbeaten streak there. But I think they're probably a little bit of fool's gold in there with that 12-match unbeaten streak. And I'm glad we exposed it. I'm glad we uncovered it, and hopefully it continues to spiral out of control downward.
7 of their next 9 matches are on the road as well. So
they play worse at home. So I wish they were at home a little more.
I know, right? They really do. They do play worse at home. But yeah, no, it's great to see El Paso doing what they're doing. I do want to go back. Is there any match that you didn't get to see you want to go back and watch this week?
Just as far as other matches,
just genuine curiosity. Is there anything that you want to go back and watch? No.
Yeah, maybe that San Antonio match, but David gave me, or not David, Robert gave me a pretty good inclination of what the hell happened there.
Yeah.
And so I don't really feel like that. Maybe the first half of Memphis, Orange County, just for the shit show that it was. But
well, I mean, there are two red cards in the second half as well. So
yeah. Yeah.
Might be worth watching that whole one to see what happened.
Just to see. But now I watched the majority of the games that I wanted to watch. How do I phrase that? I watched the majority of the games that I wanted to watch. So I didn't watch anything in whole in its entirety, but I caught quite a bit of the Phoenix Colorado Springs match. I caught some of the El Paso match. Obviously I watched all of ours, and so I'm good.
Earl, is there anything you want to go back and watch from last weekend? You're muted.
For those listening, he just gave us the finger, like, hold on a second, while he looks longingly into his computer screen, trying to figure out what's going on.
He's staring at Commander Riker. That's what he's doing.
Is that better?
Yes.
Oh, yes. There we go.
Okay. No, not really. I'm good. What happened this weekend?
All right. I mean, guys, it's been a fantastic show. Jacob is back. Appreciate you being here. Before Jacob gets us out of here, any closing thoughts, guys?
I've got two questions for you.
Okay.
For each of you. We'll do some rapid fire answers here. So we're not here forever. But I just wanted, since I won't be back on the rest of this season unless we decide to do a Saturday pod or something like that when I'm actually not there at the Academy. I would say the first half, but I feel like our season's been broken up into, you know, pre and post Quill. So since Quill has come on, who's been your MVP?
Brucey.
Earl.
Hamilton.
I'm sorry. The correct answer is Amando Moreno. We were looking for Amando Moreno there.
That's a shout too. I mean, Moreno, he's been amazing.
Are you guys fucking drunk? I just said Hamilton, you dumbass.
I know. But I already had the bit of, if you didn't say Moreno, I was going to say wrong answer. So I had to breeze past the Hamilton thing and move on, even though I would have touched base on it, but I didn't have time. Okay. I didn't have time.
Okay.
Moreno has been playing like a man possessed. I have shit on Moreno pretty consistently since his El Salvador days, even before he got hurt. And so I'm super happy to see him come back to that pre-El Salvador run that he had and actually even be better than that. And so I just wanted to call myself out for giving him shit, even though I think he deserved it when I was giving him shit. And say that I'm happy that he's back, because him and Santi, who has not yet found a rhythm, are going to be fairly important going forward, in my opinion. And then now looking ahead, if we are to continue this run of form and, you know, maybe host a playoff match, and which, better be on a Saturday, because if it's not on a Saturday and I can't go, I'm going to be pissed. But, you know, looking ahead, if we are able to, you know, host a playoff match or keep climbing the standings and make a run in the playoffs, who are the most important players on the pitch to do that? And side question, do we add more players still this year?
To answer your side question, yes. Most important player going forward in terms of securing that playoff spot, Sam.
You motherfucker.
I legitimately think Sam, like, with the way that he's played and just how good he's been defensively this year, I think he's really stepped up his game.
Is that your answer too, Earl, or would you like to pick another name?
No, fuck it. Why not? I'm going to say Tambakis.
Okay.
And to answer your side question, yes. But listen.
I knew you. I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it.
Did you know that turtles don't have teeth?
Yeah. I didn't know that. I already did, but thanks. I appreciate that. Those are both good shouts. I think to me, it's an offensive player. It might be Amondo still. I don't know. It might be a player that we haven't even brought in yet. I don't know. If I had to pick one, I think we can sustain somewhat. There's a fly on my camera. Did y'all see that? Look at it. Oh, now it's
gonna. Ladies and gentlemen, that was a cricket.
No, and listen, it was a fly.
Did you know that there are over 356 species of turtles?
Did I miss something? Is turtle the word of the day now? I'm very confused. Or is he just looking at turtle facts? I think somebody else, either Santi or Weehan, or Bruce, even though he's played very well. What is going on?
Oh, Earl, we're getting feedback off your stuff. So
super bad.
Yeah.
It's like Paranormal Activity bad. So I think Santi, Santi's got to figure something out. He's got to find Santi or Hurst have to turn it around and find some form here if we're going to really, really make a run. So just was curious what your thoughts on that were before we get out of here, since I won't be on again this season, unless we do a special podcast, like I said. So I appreciate you guys answering that. And with that, Seth, you have any closing thoughts? Earl. What is going on? Okay, I don't know what it is, but when you put your hands up here, that's when we hear it. So just like this. There you go. Perfect.
No, I mean, it's really good to see you. Really good to talk to you. Like, I know we text and stuff, but.
No, you haven't texted, Seth. I'm actually active in the group chat every once in a while, and you're not there unless it's with Harry. And then you're addressing Harry. You're not even addressing me.
I mean, you know, to be fair, yes, there are multiple conversations going on. So, but no, it is.
I know that you moved. It looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
Right. So, now, just so you know,
I have vaulted ceilings now.
Oh,
I did not. And I have carpet.
Moving on up in the world.
Neither of which I had in the old place. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, from the angle that you are right now, it looks pretty much the same.
It does. Like right up here, it does look slightly different because
it does look a little open. Yeah, a little more open.
You can see a little more open. Yeah, the ceiling would cut off like right here. But yeah. Yeah, not much different. Just upstairs with carpet, vaulted ceilings, and older appliances and cabinets. So yeah.
Cool. Earl, you got anything for us?
I don't think he heard you.
Earl, you got anything for us? What? Okay. Earl's done, apparently. Earl is mad at the world. So with that, I might be a little rusty here, but I will give it my best. David, whoever else was in, everybody else that was in the chat, thank you guys. Thank Seth and Earl here for carrying on without me the last, you know, month and a half. Can you, what are you doing, Earl? Can you not hear me?
I don't think he can hear us.
I don't know what's going on in Earl's land. That squeaky chair is going to be muted for now though. Yeah. Just thank you guys for carrying on and covering for me for the next few months, and for the last couple months. And I'm excited to have been able to come on today and can't wait to be back on here and be a regular and get my facial hair and my man bun back. So in due time that will happen. And until November for me and next week for everybody else on the podcast here, guys, Somos Unidos, and we'll see you later.
You've been listening to Somos Mas, your source for the latest news and notes on New Mexico United, the USL, and the New Mexico Runners.
All of our shows are recorded live on Tuesday nights and are streamed on our YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter pages. An audio-only version of the show goes live later in the week on all major podcast platforms. Our show is written and produced by Seth Bidoff, Jacob Terrell, and Earl Nieto, and is edited by Seth. All episodes are recorded and edited using StreamYard and Audacity.